are. Oh, my goodness. Okay. We'll see you listeners later.
Adios.
Adios.
Yes.
It's Thursday, time for the Chico News and Review, local news and arts from Butte County's community newspaper on the radio. Hey there, Butte County. Welcome to the Chico News and Review show on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. I'm Jason Cassidy, interim editor of the CNR and your host for this weekly news and arts show that is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Drunken Dumpling in Chico. First created as a food cart, Drunken Dumpling is now a dine-in restaurant serving locally sourced, fresh, handmade Asian fusion comfort food at 1414 Park Avenue, Suite 120, just behind Nobby's. Open 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Details on Facebook, Instagram, and at drunkendumplingchico.com, where we love food, flavor, and our community. And by Chico Community Acupuncture, offering accessible and effective health care through acupuncture. Chico Community Acupuncture offers a sliding scale and provides relief from aches and pains, stress reduction, and helps promote general wellness at 1815 Mangrove Avenue. Appointments and information at ChicoCommunityAcupuncture.com, on Facebook, and at 345-5300. Se hablo español. On today's show, we discuss recent developments with the Chico City Council, and we also talk to Justin Maximov, owner of J-Max Productions, about the return of live music to the Senator Theater. But first, a news brief. Legal documents filed by the City of Chico on Monday, June 21st, state that a temporary homeless shelter facility at the Chico Municipal Airport is set up and ready to begin providing tent and parking space for unhoused individuals. The city issued a press release on June 22nd saying the site will open Friday at 8 a.m. That's tomorrow. The court filings include a supplemental brief and attached letters from city staff and others related to an ongoing lawsuit filed by Legal Services of Northern California on behalf of 8 local homeless plaintiffs. The documents offer the first glimpse at the city's plans to address the lack of local shelter as demanded by the U.S. District Court. As described in the brief, the airport site consists of a graded pad that is divided into a total of 571 temporary shelter spaces. The bulk of those spaces, 421, are 20 by 20 feet, and 150 are 10 by 20 feet and can accommodate cars or tents. The area is fenced off and includes two 275 water gallon potable water tanks, 2 hand washing stations, 3 portable toilets, and 1 shade tent. The city will provide free transportation to the shelter from the downtown transit center 4 times daily. The city has hired trash, sanitation, and security services to service the airport site, but is still searching for someone to manage the location, according to the brief. The city says that the airport shelter is meant to be temporary, with more permanent shelter space to be developed at the city-owned property where the Silver Dollar BMX track is currently located. The brief argues that the airport site provides adequate shelter in line with Judge Morrison C. England Jr.'s directive that the city complies with the landmark Martin v. Boise case and requests that the plaintiff's motion for preliminary injunction be denied. It read in part, "The city now has more than enough shelter space available for the entire homeless population required by Martin for the city to resume enforcement of its anti-camping ordinances." Following several postponements, a hearing for the lawsuit is scheduled for July 2nd. It's been a big week on the homelessness front in Chico. In addition to announcing the new emergency shelter, the City Council met last Tuesday to discuss other related issues, and CNR contributing editor Evan Tuchinski was there to report on what went down. Hey, Evan.
Hey, Jason.
So this last council meeting was a kind of a very consequential in terms of the city's current lawsuit regarding the unhoused population. And they were to discuss the shelter crisis declaration that's been in place and whether or not to continue it since it's set to expire at the end of this month. What happened with all that?
They let the shelter crisis declaration lapse is what the de facto action was by basically deciding to take no action on it.
Yeah, inaction.
Inaction equaling action, exactly. There was a motion that was crafted by the two progressive members, Alex Brown and Scott Huber. Huber officially made the motion, but Alex Brown kind of encouraged him to bring it back up to have staff create a declaration for 2 more years.
Okay.
That got voted down 4-2. Vice Mayor Reynolds was not at the meeting. And that was it. There was no other action taken on it by the council. The council didn't want to basically have this continue. There was an argument that was put forth by Cammie Denlay, a new council member, first-term council member now, been around for about 8 months now, sure. That there would actually be consequences to having the shelter declaration in place. Previously, the city attorney and the city manager said there was no downside to it. She dived into an assembly bill that was created as a follow-up to the shelter declaration legislation that said the city would be required to put out reports about shelter beds and what was actually being done about sheltering in the city. And her argument was the staff time that was required for that is actually an implication. That isn't a, no drawback. That actually requires city resources. So she had raised that argument. Afterwards, when I spoke to the mayor, Andrew Coolidge, he said that wasn't part of his thinking when he voted no. His feeling was that the declaration was no longer required for what the city had planned moving forward, which was subsequently revealed this week. But nonetheless, that was still something that she argued as a, potential, in her mind, a potential downside.
For what he was referring to in terms of what they had planned, they're saying, we don't need a shelter declaration because we don't have a crisis because we have these plans. And on this week, they shared some of those plans, and including the biggest news with regard to that is the fact they're going to open a temporary shelter out at the airport starting, tomorrow.
Correct.
That is all, of course, pending a response from the court, because this is something they sent this information to the court for the lawsuit about encampments. And so it's what we have right now, but that could change.
And the shelter declaration could change also.
Exactly,
because Coolidge told me that they might bring back the shelter declaration if the judge requires them to, or if something in the settlement requires one of the provisions of the shelter declaration. The shelter declaration allows zoning rules to be relaxed. The airport property may not require that. It also allows for immunity from lawsuits in a lot of cases, for negligence, for a lot of other things. The city attorney had explained there are certain provisos. You can't be kind of willfully negligent.
Of course.
But there are a lot of immunities that you get as a municipality under the shelter declaration rules. So the city could at any time bring back the shelter declaration, which was part of the argument that was articulated by the mayor and others when they were saying why they didn't support renewing the shelter declaration immediately. Nonetheless, that immunity doesn't exist as of June 30th is when it lapses. So as of July 1st, those immunities no longer exist.
Okay.
So that's something they would have to bring back. And again, as you pointed out, the judge very well could say the shelter declaration is important.
Yeah.
So then they would have to consider doing that if they want to follow what the judge orders in that scenario.
And there's, obviously the conservative majority was behind this, was in favor of not extending the shelter declaration. But Councilwoman Alex Brown was in favor, obviously. What was her response afterwards?
She actually immediately afterwards tweeted. Hard to tell from the timing whether I couldn't quite sync it up to whether it was right after the vote or right after they paused to go into closed session, but basically said that it was a mistake. And that was almost the verbatim of what a council member said. So, yeah, very clear. And when Council Member Brown was leaving after the closed session, we passed by each other. And I said, your tweet just about said it all concisely, didn't it? And the response was basically, yep. So not much more to say Council Member Brown on that one.
Well, there was other discussions of homelessness in Chico as well. There was a presentation by Continuum of Care. What did that entail, and how did that play out?
It entailed what the Continuum of Care thought was requested, but apparently not what Mayor Coolidge had thought he requested. Okay. Apparently something got lost in translation when city staff requested from the Continuum of Care this presentation. Continuum of Care presented how it operates, its history, how it's structured, what it does. Mayor Coolidge had wanted the finances, and so did Councilmember Denley, and to some degree, Councilmember Tenden also asked about some finances in her questioning. They kind of wanted the bottom line. They wanted to know the money that's been coming into Chico for homeless services from the federal grants through the Continuum of Care.
Okay.
They want that very specific accounting. And the Continuum of Care representative said, well, we can pull that report. It'll take time, but we can pull that exact report. But both of them told me that that wasn't in the request that they got for the presentation.
Okay.
Interestingly, at the end, there was talk about how much funding comes from the city and from two county departments to the Continuum of Care. And Mayor Coolidge suggested that maybe the city should look into how much money it's providing, that maybe it should provide less and the other cities/town in the county should be providing something because they're getting services.
Okay.
So it was kind of this implication that maybe the city's going to cut back.
All right. There's a lot of contentiousness on homelessness in the city right now and during that meeting. And it just things sort of in a related story got more twisted and more contentious after the meeting. One of the counselors resigned.
Yes, Scott Huber. He had actually zoomed into that meeting, which turned out to be his last meeting. He was in Wyoming working as a wildlife guide. And he had said that he had gotten approval from the city clerk for what he was doing, that he had vetted this summer position by the city clerk. He had planned to fly out for meetings in July and August, but that because he was participating by Zoom, this was going to be still attendance, still continually attending these meetings versus being absent from meetings. So in his estimation, he was still participating actively as a council member. Concerned citizens, we'll say, felt otherwise. Some of them rallied by Citizens for a Safe Chico posts and some advertisements, apparently contacted his employer back in Wyoming, and he quit his job there and came back here to Chico, and then subsequently felt pressure here in Chico and quit his council seat on Monday.
Wow. And some of the reasoning he gave in his statement was that his wife and him had both been targeted online for their jobs, not just this Wyoming job, but just in their home address as well.
Yeah. He basically said he'd been doxxed.
Yeah.
So there was a level of political engagement, let's say, that's kind of reached a new level.
Yeah.
Vice Mayor Reynolds has talked about her business being targeted for graffiti and windows being broken that she has tied to her political positions. This is a different level of economic and personal warfare, if you will, against somebody for their positions.
Regardless of people's political position, it's too bad that the rancor had to get to this sort of personal level. And it seems like you can disagree with someone without having to tear them down.
Yeah, exactly. And for disclosure, we have worked with Councilmember Huber. He previously worked at the News and Review, so we know him personally.
Yes.
But beyond that personal connection from half decade ago, we've just observed him and covered him. And but we would, I think, say, I mean, I know that I would have the same reaction to any council member, regardless of what I felt about Vice Mayor Reynolds. I didn't want to see her place destroyed because of views. I find other ways that I would disagree with her. You know, people can disagree with her in public and protest against her, speak about her at meetings, and then ultimately vote her out of office if they don't agree with her.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think Huber's colleagues on the council, except for Councilmember Brown, have not come out as of this point and spoken up against this.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see if they do.
Yeah, it would be wonderful to see a little decency win out. All right. Well, thanks, Evan. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
The next Chico City Council meeting takes place Tuesday, July 6th at 6 p.m. For more information, visit chico.ca.us/city-council. Listening to the Chico News and Review Show on KZFR 90.1 FM and KZFR.org. Next up, Bring Back the Arts, the Chico News and Review series in which yours truly interviews the leaders of local arts and music venues about their pandemic recovery efforts. This week, the spotlight is on longtime concert promoter Justin Maximov, who has been putting on shows in Chico and at venues across the western states for 32 years. In 1999, while booking shows at the now-defunct Brickworks Club, he started J-Max Productions and grew the scope of his live music company to include venues in Nevada, Oregon, and California. In Chico, J-Max's main venue in recent years has been the Senator Theater, where Justin has brought a constant stream of big-name acts like Modest Mouse and Bone Thugs and Harmony to Chico, and where last May, the marquee lights went dark as COVID shut down live music. With California reopening, Maximov has cautiously started booking shows again, and if the September 18th Phoenix Flexin show goes off as planned, it will have been 18 months between shows at the Downtown Theater. The CNR caught up with Maximov by phone earlier this week to talk about the stressful year and the uncertainty of what's to come. So you have shows on the calendar. There's a show in September happening in Chico at the Senator that J-Max is putting on. That's amazing.
Yes. Let's hope so. First show back right now is Labor Day weekend in Tahoe. It's the Hard Rock. It's with Revolution. And then we come back in Chico in September is the plan right now.
Phoenix Flexing, is that the first, or Flexin, is it the first Chico show?
It is.
And how, I imagine, booking shows is in normal times is something that requires a ton of planning and forethought. How long have you been working on this sort of fall schedule of shows?
You know, to be honest, we're kind of sitting back. We're not trying to lead the charge here. We're not Live Nation. We're not Another Planet. I'm not trying to run lead here. I'm kind of sitting back and waiting to see how this plays out with everybody.
Sure.
The people that back in March were starting to announce shows for this summer, I felt were really aggressive. And a lot of the shows that got booked for the amphitheater and places like that in June and July got pushed back.
Sure.
But in the last month, it's almost like things went hyper speed and it was just like, whoa. What just happened? You know, opening up June 15th, it's weird how all of a sudden it's like flipped a switch, and now everything's okay. So we're still kind of waiting. I even think September is a little bit aggressive for us. I would prefer to wait a little bit longer, but it was just it just felt kind of like it was time with college coming back and everything else going on that it was maybe time to test the waters and see how things feel. You know, we're not going back 100% right now. We're just kind of doing a few shows here and there because I don't know how things are going to play out. I don't know how things are going to happen, but we're just testing the waters. It's not that we're afraid to. I don't want to put tens of thousands of dollars into plexiglass and all this PPE stuff and preventative measures and then find out a week later that it wasn't necessary.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
We're not trying to get the forefront of this. I'm just trying to kind of see where people are comfortable and where they want to be, and you know, what plays out comfortably for people. You know, we want people to be happy, and we want people to be safe. But at the same time, I'm not like rushing to jump into this, like, you know, we've got to get like the first show back. That's not what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. But I mean, are you, have you thought about it? I mean, I know people are excited to just like sort of do life again and do the normal stuff that they like to do. Are you excited about the chance about putting on a show in front of people?
Oh, absolutely. No, the first time we're back, it's going to be amazing. I can't wait to see people in line for a show and then seeing the lights go down and the music start. It's going to be amazing. We actually, our sound guy came in like a month and a half ago and said, hey, maybe I should just check out the system. You know, it's been like a year since you fired up the system.
Sure.
We turned down the lights, turned the system up, and it literally gave me goosebumps. So absolutely. The first time that we fire up that system, turn down the lights, band goes on stage or DJ or whatever, it's, I can't wait for that. It's just a lot going into it right now in terms of, okay, it's not as easy as flipping a switch.
Yeah.
There's not a huge workforce out there. I've lost most of my employees. I don't know how we're going to staff it. You know, I mean, we'll figure it all out.
Well, and I know in California, you know, there's been a lot of, you know, a lot of news about the economy reopening, and they've put it out there that, you know, pretty much everything's open with, you know, they don't have to have social distancing, and if you're vaccinated, you don't need masks. But there are some stipulations with bigger shows. You guys don't fall into any of your venues, don't fall into the mega event thing, do you, where it's like 5,000 people or more?
Actually, in Tahoe, we do.
Okay.
But in Tahoe, I'm on the Nevada side, so it's not...
Different thing, yeah.
Yeah, in California, though, it's like they're going back 100% with sporting events, so I don't know. The reason I held off for a while is because we were never... Live concerts and sporting events were never in any of Gavin Newsom's tiers.
Yeah.
Now that we're open, it's kind of been pushed aside and not really addressed, and people are doing whatever they want to do, so it's weird. I really thought we were a lot further away from doing events than I think we are. A month ago I really thought we were still not sure things were going to happen in the fall, and then all of a sudden in the last 4 weeks things have just changed. It's weird. Again, I'm not trying to set the pace here. I'm not trying to be the guy running in the front, because we're not one of the big dogs. You know, we deal in tertiary markets and secondary markets. And I'm seeing everybody can sell tickets and act like they're getting full capacity. So it's like, okay, you know, the casinos are doing their thing. You know, the Ice Cube show's happening in Reading, and you've got all these shows happening at the amphitheater. So it's like, okay, how long do I sit on my butt and just wait for the government to give me the approval when everybody's acting like the green light's been given, so they're just moving forward? You know, I can't just sit and wait.
Have you been, from the artist standpoint, in terms of booking, are there a lot of eager artists who are ready to go? Has it been easygoing?
You know what? A year ago, there were a lot of artists that seemed like they were very COVID concerned about. Because with a lot of these events that we had scheduled for, say, spring of 2020, summer of 2020, they postponed them to the fall or spring of this year, thinking, oh, it's only going to be another 3 months or whatever. They would send contracts that have way new language in them. Like, you know, they don't want hospitality provided. They just want buyouts because they don't want anybody touching their food. And they don't want loaders because the loaders, you know, would be touching their equipment. The contracts that were in place a year ago with all the COVID restrictions, it's pretty much gone.
Wow, interesting. That's really interesting. What about from the audience standpoint? Have you had people buying tickets?
Yeah, like crazy.
Wow, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, people are just dying for it.
But we also get some people that you know, a small percent, it's a much smaller percentage, but we do get people saying that, you know what, I'm not comfortable going to show, and I'm not going to go to show.
Well, you and I talked about a year ago when things were closing down, and you mentioned that at the time, you know, this was all new territory, and you had no backup plan. What did you end up doing to survive?
To be honest, I wish I could go back in time and know that business was going to be down for 16 months, because if it had been, I would have taken up a hobby. I would have gone and gotten another degree, maybe gotten a real estate license or whatever. But for me, what happened was in March, you know, we thought things were only going to be down until maybe after Easter is what I think, you know, Trump said last year, hoping to be done. And then Easter rolls around and we're hoping for summer shows, and then summer shows don't happen. So we're hoping for Christmas. I always had this 3-month window where I thought things were going to change. I had no clue. I had no idea that it was going to last for, you know, 18 months.
Oh, yeah.
So I kept working with the mindset that I'm 3 months away from doing shows. So every time we postpone shows, I'm booking more shows or changing the date from, you know, Tech 9 in May of 2020 to Tech 9 in October of 2020 to Tech 9 of April of 2021 to Tech 9 of October 2021. Oh, so we kept having to change flyers, change tickets, you know, reissue tickets. We never stopped moving that in that regard. I've got friends in the business who just checked out. They said, you know what, I'm going to open a food cart. When this thing's all done, and I'm not joking, it literally opened a food cart, and his food cart did so well, he actually opened a second food cart.
Oh, my
and,
gosh.
You know, he pivoted. I just kept thinking, okay, we're just a couple months away. So I stayed the course and went into a lot of debt. But at the same time, my yard looks really good. I spent a lot of time in my yard, so my yard looks really good.
Did you get any help, like from the Shuttered Venues grant or Save Our Stages or any of those kind of things?
You know, we're still in the waiting stage on that. I checked when I landed tonight, and I'm still in the submitted stage. We've been in the submitted stage for like 4 weeks now, and you know, that money was passed and signed back in November, and here we are. 7-8 months
so
later,
slow.
And people still, for the most part, haven't received the money, which is really weird because the restaurant grant, you know, that all went out within a month. And as far as I have seen and been told, that there's, based on the number of applicants and the grant amount of money, there's plenty of money for all the applicants. It would be really nice if they just got that money out.
Of course, a lot of things depend on whether or not you get that money. But looking forward just at, like, sort of the arts in general and the music scene and being a promoter for performing arts, like, how are you feeling about the future and moving forward? Are you optimistic?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it's all going to come back. We'll figure out a way to make it work. What else am I going to do?
Yeah.
52 years old. I have, you know, tattoos on my hands. I'm not gonna, you know, go get a part-time job. This is what I do. This is what we do. We'll figure it out. We'll figure out a way to make it work. Once it starts back up, we'll be right back where we were.
There are now a handful of shows on the JMAX schedule for the coming fall, including Phoenix Flexen on September 18th. Tech 9 on October 9th and Coulter Wall on October 10th. Visit jmaxproductions.net for the full schedule and ticket information. Thank you for tuning in to the Chico News and Review this week, and thank you KZFR 90.1 FM for hosting us each Thursday at 5 p.m. And as always, thank you to Cat Depot for our theme music that opens and closes this show. For more information on the CNR, including online stories, arts and events calendar, print editions, and ways you can support community media, visit chico.newsreview.com. Take care.